We are now live.
Okay, I will call the meeting of the Lane Transit District Board of Directors work session, Wednesday, May 4th, 2022, into order. And I guess first thing is roll. I understand Caitlin won't be here. Pete Knox?
Here.
Susan Cox?
Here.
Emily was warned that she may not be here. Are you here? Well, she may join us later. Michelle Weber?
Here.
And Gino Grimaldi? And no Gino. Has anyone heard from Gino?
Gino is on vacation, so I would guess he might not be planning to attend.
Uh-huh. So I guess that's who's here today. And I have no particular comments from the president. Does Mark, do you have any comments from the general manager? You're muted, Mark. You're still
after
muted.
After 2 years, you'd think I'd figured that out, you know, that little red thing. But no, I'm just coming home from the Aptum Mobility Conference, which was an annual event and was held in Columbus. And so I'm on my way home. It's a good conference. And so that's about the only update I have for you right now. So we'll get on with the agenda.
So it's a good conference. Any particular new exciting things?
Now, this one is really more kind of ops driven, you know. It's and so you know, it was, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, there's not a lot of new stuff, I guess. You know, the big talk is electric buses still, and you know, what propulsion is going to come out in the end as the fuel of choice, right? And so there's still a lot of those discussions and uncertainty around, you know, what the future of buses are going to be. So, but a lot of good discussions about it. A lot of data being collected. So,
good. So, are there any additions to the agenda? Anyone on the board wishing to make some comment? Personally, last week I sent out an email with a flyer from the May Mobility people to everyone. Did anyone get that? I haven't seen a response, but I wanted to have our general manager candidates be prepared to talk about autonomous vehicles and perhaps, but when I looked on the list, I didn't see any response to anything there. So maybe Camille, did you see
it? I didn't see it come through.
Well, I'll say that then. I'll send a message to Camille. If no one has any objections, I wanted to make sure that the board felt comfortable with me sending a flyer out to the candidates.
No. Everything goes through a TransPro with, we don't have interactions with the candidates. You know, that's their job. And so they interact with the candidates until they're on site. And then, you know, that's our opportunity, but it's not good form to reach out to them in advance.
Okay. Well, I held back. I didn't do anything until I got some secure.
Yeah. I appreciate that, Don. But yeah, everything should go through Camille and TransPro until, you know, we get them here. So
I guess I'll turn it over to you, Mark, and you can turn it over to Michael later, and we'll proceed with the general manager recruitment process.
Okay. Camille, if you bring up, so what we're going to do tonight is we're going to walk through kind of a draft schedule that we put together. And I know you guys are from Rob Zako and that we are looking at a community forum as one part of it, but we also have several interview panels that we're putting together. So I just want to walk through the draft schedules so you all are can give us some input, and if there's anything that you know, you see that you or that you'd like to see that's not there, then you know, let us know now, because we really are trying to finalize. It's three jam-packed days for these candidates, really. So there's a lot of, you know, a lot going on with you know, various community interview panels, and then, you know, some tours, employee forums, community forums. So I'll just quickly walk through this. And so we plan on coming in on sometime Sunday, and just, you know, a director, I'll take one of them out to dinner. One of the other directors and board members are welcome to just go out to dinner and kind of start the week off just in a relaxed atmosphere, and just kind of to get to know them a little bit. And then Monday, we'll start off the interview processes. And so the first interview panel is has members of the Strategic Planning Committee, and it has members of CATC, and it has some best board members. And, you know, at least they're invited. We're still trying to finalize exactly who, but we've got a commitment from three people from the SPC, and one of them is Mike Eister, who also serves on the best board. So that's kind of kick off the interviews for Monday. And in the meantime, we'll also take them in between their interviews. We'll take them on facility tours. And then later in the day, we'll have an employee forum. So they can kind of give employees a little talk about who they are, and then give the employees a chance to ask questions and talk to them a little bit. And then we'll have a panel interview with employees after that. So it'll be a, you know, formal interview process with a select group of employees that will include the union president and some directors and some of the diversity council. And so it'll be a kind of a broad spectrum of employees. And so that's day one. And then the next day, we're starting, they actually have the morning to kind of do what they want to do and kind of prepare for the rest of the day. But, you know, we'll have a panel interview in the afternoon, just because that was when people were available. And so that has that panel will have the mayors and city managers and CEOs of the chambers. And again, you know, we haven't got them all nailed down, but we've got quite a few of them nailed down. And the panels will be, you know, probably six or seven people. And so then later that day, we'll provide dinner for them, and then we'll have the community forum down at the deck. And so, you know, and it really is kind of a less formal environment, but again, they can have, you know, 10 minutes to tell people about themselves and who they are, and give them a chance to ask them questions, and then just have, you know, kind of a social time where they can, you know, walk around and talk to people. And so that's Tuesday. And then Wednesday is really the board day. And so that will be, you know, starting at 11, the board directors will go through the process with each candidate, and then we'll top off the day with an executive session to you know, kind of take all the input that we've gotten from the other panels and the other public forums, and bring those to you, and then you have a discussion about, you know, the candidates, and hopefully can make a decision. So that is kind of it in a nutshell. And Susan?
I guess I am a bit confused. I thought the days that I have blocked out are the 25th and the 27th.
I don't know.
I can help with that.
Please do.
So when I originally started working out the logistics of these 4 days, and I had sent the board a doodle poll to see the board's availability, and it was originally the 25th and the 27th that the board was available, and then a conflict came up on the 27th, and so the 25th was the only day that we had full board availability. And so you should have received a cancellation for the 27th. If you didn't, I'll check. I'm happy to check into that.
And I mean, I still have the 25th and 27th.
Well, the 25th is the important day for the board, because that's most of the day as the board and the candidates. And the other ones, you know, the board can't, you know, like some of the other panel interviews, that the board isn't expected to go to those. Although if they can go to the public forums, that might be good, but you're not, you know, it's not required. Really, the day for the board is the 25th.
So the days are now the 24th and the 25th. There's nothing on the 27th. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's the 23rd, 24th, 25th are the day the candidates will be here for their the process.
Okay, well, I didn't get those changes, and the 24th is, I'm not available.
Yeah, we knew that. And we knew that it was very difficult because the board had literally 2 days they were available, right? And so we made sure we held the 25th for the board day. And, you know, we'll collect information, and any of the board members that can come to the other ones, great. But, you know, the others intended, you know, for the community to give input and check it out. So, you know, yeah, scheduling is always a challenge in these things for sure.
Okay, so we're going to get the updated calendar then.
Yes, as soon as we finalize the schedule, we'll get out to the board.
So is there any other discussion at this point?
So anything that you see that, you know, you think, well, you know, we need to have that or don't need to have that, or is there anything that you just see that or something else you'd like to see or anything like that?
So these events that the board is welcome to attend, we'll receive whatever the information by email to, I mean,
yeah,
Sunday, yeah, evening,
yes,
and Monday, stuff like that. Okay.
Yeah. And then on the open forum, we'll, you know, and the rest of them are the panel interviews, and we'll collect information from the panels and bring it to the board, you know, what the panel's recommendations are. And then the 25th, the board will take all that information along with interviewing the candidates and the executive session and hopefully make a decision.
So in this process, somewhere I read that each candidate would have 90 minutes with each board member. Is that correct?
No. The board will interview them as a panel.
So there's no individual?
No.
I mean,
no, only socially. So there are no, it's got to be the same for every candidate, Don. So the panel is they're going to ask all the same questions. It's got to be structured, and it's got to be fair. So we just can't send them off with board members, you know, I mean.
No, I just wanted clarification because I thought I'd seen that somewhere in all of the stuff that's come through. My mistake.
So any others? Go ahead.
I do have a question. Will we be... So the other public, the community panels and those participants, has that all been selected, and will we be able to see who that is?
Yes, we're just finalizing it now. Camille, we're pretty close on all the panels, aren't we?
Yes, I should have it finalized by the end of the week.
So will the board have any input in the selection or who's included in this process?
The board always has final say. So, I mean, you know, we're looking at it saying, okay, you know, who are the people that, you know, really should be involved? And, you know, that's, and, you know, availability is a big issue too. So, you know, I know we've got a commitment from Mayor Venice. We've got a commitment from Mayor Van Gordon. We've got some commitments from some of the city managers. And so, and the, you know, that's the GM's peer group, right? So that's an important group. So, but we'll send you the names. And then the other ones were ones we talked about already were the members of the committees, you know, so the strategic planning committee, we've got three members there. And then I think one from the CATC and then some community members at large that, but we'll send you the names. And, you know, if there's some things that are missing, we can regroup and take a look at who we should add or remove.
Thank you.
So how soon will the other panel members be alerted to when they're invited? Or so we would know if
they've all been invited. We're just, you know, everybody's scheduled. Like say, scheduling is very difficult with busy people. And so we're just finalizing that. And as Camille said, she should have it finalized by the end of the week. Once it's finalized, we'll send out the schedule, who the panel members are. And then, you know, you can let us know if there's just something that, you know, is glaring that, you know, should, you know, that people that should be there. So. Okay. So any other questions? Mike, do you have anything to add to the discussion here tonight?
Just a reminder, my plan is to arrive on Sunday and be in attendance at all of the interviews on Monday and Tuesday, and to capture some notes about the performance of the candidates, and especially those things that are very outstandingly good or outstandingly bad, if that happens. And I'll wrap that up Tuesday night or Wednesday morning. It probably won't hit your, I'll send it through Camille, so it probably won't arrive in your inboxes till first thing Wednesday morning. But then I'll be available if you want any amplification on what went on during those interviews. I also had a question. Can I answer any questions first? Director Cox?
I guess I have a question about, so if you're doing a summary of your thinking or your thoughts, and that we get that before we actually meet the candidates, it seems like it'd be more appropriate for us to have our unbiased, unvarnished impressions, and then that we receive, you know, what you have to say. And at that point, it seems, you know, probably we'll all feel the same way. But
we can provide it to you at the executive session or right before the executive session. That we, you know, you have all your notes and those notes. That'd be fine.
Yeah, that's a good thought. That's certainly fine with me. That gives me a few more hours to work on it.
Yeah. It just seems like... it's not going to be as wide open for impression if we are going to get impressions from you prior. So thanks.
That's a good point. That's a very valid point. I think you're absolutely right.
And we'll be working with Transpro to develop questions, you know, for the interview panels, and we'll provide a draft of those. And if there's anything, you know, that you see that things you think we should ask or be a part of that, we'll seek your input on that as well. All right. So
if there's no further discussion, I guess we can go to Ride Source Fixed Route Connections.
All right. So we're good with the schedule, the way it looks, and I mean the panels and the forums and everything. I mean, it's a pretty good outreach, I think. And so we're giving a lot of people a lot of opportunities to weigh in. So I think that's mm-hmm. important. One other thing, we're still on the recruitment, Dawn, is I know the board did have a discussion about our some kind of a written exercise, and we've kind of struggled with that a little bit because we're trying to figure out, how much weight should it have? Who grades that? I mean, who evaluates it, and what criteria do we use to evaluate it? I mean, most of these guys have master's degrees, so they're pretty good writers. I mean, and so I'm trying to figure out the value here. So, Michelle and Susan.
When we had that conversation at the last meeting, one of my thoughts was that once we saw applications and cover letters, that maybe that would help provide some of that insight or you know, whatever it was we were trying to accomplish with that. So we've seen those applications, we've seen those cover letters. So I guess my question is, does that satisfy that request that was made?
I guess from my perspective, I'm not sure that everyone had a cover letter. I don't remember. They didn't all. I don't know if all three of the candidates did. But
all three candidates.
I guess I feel like, of course, these are all going to be bright, smart people. But how someone writes, I think, is important. I guess I feel pretty strongly that just including that, not a big, long thing, but, you know, maybe just to say, what is your philosophy of transportation and community? They all obviously have the same thing. I don't know. I think it's helpful.
I mean, it's a board decision. If that's what if the board agrees that that's what we should do, then we can just let them know, and we'll just give we'll provide their written thing to the board. And as part of the evaluation process, and I mean, I think we can do that. It's no problem.
Perfect.
Well, do you want to propose that, Susan?
Yeah, I am proposing that. I feel like if we have it prior to the interviews, there may be some questions that come from that.
Okay, we'll draft the question similar to what you suggested, Susan. We'll get it to him, and we'll just have them, in one page or something. And
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Good. I just wanted to clarify that, and wondered how you wanted to use that. So that's good.
So okay. We have consensus with this board at this point.
That's what I'm taking it.
Okay. So anything further on this subject, or we're going to John? You're muted, Mark.
Yeah, Mike, do you have anything else?
No, you touched on the two things I was going to ask about. So I'm all set. I'll sign off now unless there's something else I can assist with.
Nope, I think we're good to go. Thank you.
Okay,
thanks.
See you all in person, John, in a few weeks. Thank you.
Mike.
Thanks, Chanel.
Have a good night.
And I may also have to go catch an airplane here before too long, so.
All right, well, good evening, and thanks for having me, members of the board. I'm John Allen, LTD's Accessible Services Program Manager. I'm here to provide a presentation and update on the interconnected relationships between our fixed route and ride source services. So these relationships are complex, and so I'm going to do my best to describe how the services impact one another. But I also hope you'll have some good questions for me along the way. This presentation is part of a series you've been hearing from me about, intended to provide the board with background information that will tie into our upcoming comprehensive and ride source operations analyses and an upcoming RFP for our ride source contractor. So as always, let's take a moment just to reflect on how the work we're doing connects our community. Fixed route and paratransit service are the core of what we do, and it's how we primarily get people where they need to go. So to the greatest extent possible, We strive to make our fixed route service accessible. It's a point of pride in our community. We do it better than most, and we were the first transit agency to have a fully wheelchair accessible fleet. Many of the ways we make our fixed route system may seem invisible or seamless nowadays. Audio stop announcements, a visual reader bar, lowering the bus, priority areas for older adults and people with disabilities, of course, ramps and lifts on every vehicle, and the list goes on. However, no matter how accessible we make our buses, they aren't going to be able to meet the needs of the entire community. So due to the nature of someone's disability, maybe a bus stop is too far away, or maybe someone isn't able to stand for 15 minutes while waiting for a bus, or maybe they have challenges functioning on a crowded bus full of people. While we always are looking to innovate ways to encourage fixed route ridership for people with disabilities, we have to acknowledge that there are times it's not going to be the right fit. And that's where ADA paratransit service comes in. First, this is a requirement. Here we call this service RideSource, but generally any community with public transit is going to have their own version of paratransit under their own name and branding. So the idea is that for anyone unable to access the fixed route bus due to a disability, then we have a way that we can get them to their destination. So every community approaches this a bit differently, and many communities look to us as a model and a national leader in accessibility. We connect our community of older adults and people with disabilities with resources and help everyone live independent lives. I'm going to show several maps now. And don't worry, there's not going to be any quizzes on these, but what I want to show are the differences in what we call our area, since that means different things depending on the context. No one's wrong. These are just different ways of showing the complex and overlapping relationships between our programs. This first map shows an example of the LTD district boundary. At its most simple, this is the payroll tax boundary for LTD's general fund. And for many, this is the extent of where we can expect LTD to go. So we're not going to send a fixed route bus outside of the blue lines. Being inside the lines doesn't mean that everyone is entitled to the same service, though. So it doesn't make sense for us to send buses up the McKenzie every 10 minutes because we burn a lot of fuel with hardly any passengers. So while we do send buses up the McKenzie, we consider that routes outside of our core metropolitan area, and we make choices to determine where we go and how often we go there. So here's where we go most often. Sure, we have fixed route buses that go to Vinita, Junction City, Coburg, Cottage Grove, Lowell, and up the McKenzie, but we can call those rural or inner city or connecting routes. That's going to be important here shortly. Let's call this map our core metropolitan service area, which is a nice summary of where our buses go in Eugene and Springfield. This blob here is our RideSource ADA paratransit service boundary. You'll notice that at best, this shape is a bit erratic. And imagine trying to explain to someone living on the outskirts what is or isn't in the RideSource service area. There's a method to it, and I'll explain it a little bit. But for anyone needing to check if their address is in or out, the easiest way is just to call RideSource and have us look it up. So here you can see the RideSource boundary superimposed over the core service area map. And you can see how our paratransit boundary roughly contours around where our fixed route buses go. And that's exactly as it should be, as our minimum federal requirement is to travel on paratransit service anywhere within 3/4 of a mile where our fixed route goes. Now, when you use a virtual protractor to draw out 3/4 of a mile from our fixed route bus routes and stops, you get the shape like I just showed you. I've got the more formal regulatory version up on the screen, but really what we're tasked with doing is to serve people with disabilities who live near a bus but can't use it. You also notice there are limits to where RideSource paratransit goes. So it doesn't extend all the way to Vinita or Junction City. It's because there are exceptions to where we are required to serve. If a route primarily connects two communities over a longer distance, rather than a loop with frequent stops along the way, it becomes exempt from the paratransit requirement. This is a very important distinction because paratransit service is expensive and we'll be talking money soon. However, generally, we do need to err on the side of helping people with disabilities. The way our service is designed, this doesn't happen very often, but in circumstances where we need to travel around something, like a public transportation donut without any service in the middle, we need to fill in the gaps, even if it's further away than 3/4 of a mile. So in general, we have a contiguous paratransit area that roughly covers Eugene and Springfield. However, it's based on where our buses go, and it doesn't otherwise correspond to the city limits or the urban growth boundary or the LTD district boundary, et cetera. We do happen to go in Florence for RideSource ADA paratransit, as we do have fixed route service there known as the Rhodey Express. So we can and have chosen to go beyond minimum federal regulations. Generally, we're enthusiastic about any services that help connect our community, but there are impacts on the system as a whole. So for example, many years ago, there was a decision made to honor requests for RideSource service for people living slightly outside of the ADA paratransit boundary. In practice, this generally means that on a request basis, if we can drive to someone's home within 5 minutes of the boundary, we'll agree to perform the trip for a small surcharge of $5.50. The good news is that it means now more people have access to public transportation who might not otherwise have other options. However, what seems like an easy decision can have large impacts. The choice has two that I wanted to make clear to you. First, we have to make sure that anytime we're offering a service that it's done equitably. So that means if we offer a new geographic boundary for one family, we need to similarly offer it to anyone who lives within 5 minutes of our boundary area. And we've seen over time that this program has grown from a small exception where originally we may have been helping one family to now we can easily do over 1,000 trips a year. The second impact is financial. Just like with our in-area services, farebox revenue is a token gesture which helps, but doesn't come close to offsetting the cost of providing service. In this case, even with a surcharge, fare would typically cover only a fraction of the cost of actually performing the trip. Or another way of putting it is that we wind up subsidizing these trips. In general, that's actually pretty normal. So we're not a for-profit business and we're not here to make money. We're here to help people. But it does start to add up when we're getting thousands of trip requests. And the more money we subsidize towards premium service means there's less available for our core services. We can further explore examples like these another time, but I wanted to just highlight this example of the gravity of the decisions we rely upon the board to make on where we go and how often we go there, or as you've heard it before, as coverage versus frequency. Being realistic, we can't be all things for all people, and so the board does make tough choices about who and where we serve. Now is the part of the presentation where I tell you to forget all those maps I showed you earlier, because we also go everywhere to provide non-emergent medical transportation for Medicaid members. These trips are usually in Lane County, but if someone needs to see a specialist at OHSU, we'll go to Portland, and we utilize planes, trains, and automobiles to get people to their medical appointments coast to coast. These trips generally get reimbursed through Medicaid, so this huge service area doesn't have the same kind of financial impacts as our paratransit or district boundaries. So, besides boundaries, what do fixed route and RideSource services have to do with one another? Well, we'll always have some riders who will exclusively ride the bus and some riders who will exclusively ride RideSource. But we actually have a large number of people who can ride both. A classic example is someone who has what we call good day, bad day eligibility. That means if somebody's feeling good on a particular day, they might choose to go down to the nearest stop and catch a bus. But on a bad day, maybe they're in a lot of pain, their back is hurting, or standing at a bus stop isn't a realistic option, they'll call RideSource. So the decisions we make on fixed route service influence when and how often this person will choose to call RideSource. How far does someone have to walk or roll to get to the nearest bus stop? Does it have benches or shelters? Are there platforms or curb cuts? How often does the bus go by and how crowded is it? How many transfers are going to be required to get to a destination? All of these decisions can influence ridership on each system. As you might expect, on a per trip basis, it's much more expensive for us to do trips on paratransit than on fixed route service. So we have a financial incentive to make our fixed route system as accessible as possible. Wherever we fall short on fixed route, we will still be required to perform the trip using more expensive paratransit service. However, again, we're not a for-profit business, and so our primary interest is that accessibility is the right thing to do, and we don't need a financial incentive or government regulation to know that. But it is nice to know that in addition to increasing independence for people with disabilities, we can save some money while we're at it. So I'll give my usual reminder, we are first in the country to have a fully wheelchair accessible vehicle fleet before anyone's told us we had to. However, this can go both ways. If we choose to make changes to our fixed route system, such as reducing frequency or service area, we may also be increasing paratransit ridership. So if we try to cut costs on the fixed route side, I may then need to spend all those savings and then some for trips displaced onto the paratransit side. It can get complicated, but that's what we're here for as staff, to support you with making informed decisions. So to better do this, we're undergoing a comprehensive operations analysis to evaluate our fixed route service and a ride source operations analysis to evaluate our paratransit service. We're going to bring that information back to the board to best equip the board to have these staff-informed conversations about frequency and coverage. So today is just introductory information, but because this is such a complex and important topic, we wanted to start initiating these conversations early into the process. So please don't feel like you have to know all this information or have all the answers right now. This is just the first contact in what will be an extensive effort. But I'm here for any questions you may have at this point.
Pete, do you want to have a question here?
Thanks. Excellent presentation. I appreciate you giving us that information. I'm going to ask I don't know if this is the right place to ask this question, but I've talked to people with disabilities, and one of the things that happens, it's somebody who regularly rides the fixed route system, but they go to an area that, they might use one of those large wheelchairs that are, they're fairly heavy and don't exactly do well on turf. Rather, they pretty much are relegated to concrete. And sometimes we have situations where the ramp will go onto a concrete pad, which has no sidewalk around it. And so is that a situation that might give somebody eligibility for ride source that, would otherwise not necessarily need it because they can use a fixed route system. They live near it and all of that. Does that make sense what I'm asking here?
Yeah, that's a great question. And thank you to Director Knox for that. So absolutely accurate. Sidewalks actually can make a huge difference in accessibility of public transit and can make the difference between someone being eligible for using rideshare service or being able to independently ride on a fixed route bus. And so there are some factors that are going to be outside of our control. For example, someone lives at the top of a steep hill that they're not able to navigate down, or in inclement weather during snow and ice, we might need to make eligibility exceptions for that. But sidewalks is something that as a community, we could actually do a better job of making our stops more accessible. So that is something as a community that remains within our control, though I think as LTD, we tend to try and advocate for that, but often that's gonna fall within, based on the geographic area, that could be city, county, state property with a lot of different stakeholders involved. But I'm in total agreement. Sidewalks really could contribute towards making our system as a whole more accessible. And often when we're only in control of just the stop area, we may have a pad or a platform available for boarding, but that doesn't do someone a lot of good if there's no access to sidewalks from there. And so for some, that is a consideration in whether or not they're choosing ride source as an option. And that does come at increased cost to us when we need to do so.
Thank you.
John, I have a question about the service to South Lane area. Now, we're serviced right now with a grant to do a pilot for the LTD connector in Cottage Grove. And then we have a contract with the city of Cottage Grove that has a contract with South Lane Wheels that provides mostly paratransit service. But I'm, you know, we have strict city limits around these two communities of Crestwell and Cottage Grove. So it seems like that wouldn't really affect the ADA requirements. There may be some places in Cottage Grove it's more than 3/4 mile from the fixed route, but very little. And I kind of wonder, it seems like we have to depend upon essentially exploiting other people who work for South Lane Wheels so that they work at a lower rate than most of the other members of the service providing contractors within LTD. And I'm just curious about how this will continue in the future. Are we going to have a pilot project? Is that funded until it goes until forever, or does it end relatively soon? I'm not sure of these things. Could you clarify that?
Really good questions from Director Norton, so thank you for those. We do have many different services that are currently happening in the Cottage Grove area. So we do have our fixed route bus operates a route that goes through the area. There is our mobility on demand pilot project, which functions similarly, but is different to our ADA paratransit service. So through an app, it allows someone to get picked up directly where they're at and take them exactly where they're going. I can go places where a fixed route bus couldn't. In addition, there's also a dial-a-ride service offered through South Lane Wheels, contracted through the city of Cottage Grove. So LTD is an important stakeholder and partner. However, that is a service that's contracted from the city of Cottage Grove to South Lane Wheels. And then LTD winds up leasing vehicles to assist with that transportation. And that service is not just the Cottage Grove area, but much of South Lane County as well. So we're big supporters of the services that are there. We certainly lend technical expertise, but some of those services are functions of the city of Cottage Grove, which LTD provides support to rather than directly through LTD itself. We certainly have been assisting the city of Cottage Grove in receiving funds to support transit services, such as their 5311 application for federal funds through ODOT. So I would say there are many different services that are going on in the area. LTD does our best to try and be a good partner through all that. And there's several stakeholders involved. I believe City of Cottage Grove can choose both what contractors it wants to use to provide services, as well as the rates it wants to establish for reimbursement. And LTD is doing our best to be able to ensure that Cottage Grove has access to resources so that people can get where they need to go, with the MOD pilot program being a way that we can help support that in a more direct way. So that's been a test of technology that we'll be able to hopefully use to establish either similar or different types of programs in our community to get more people, more places.
So would the MOD continue to function, or does that depend upon a specific grant for a specific period?
Currently, our MOD program is funded using STIF funds, which are on a biennial cycle. So every 2 years, we reapply for those funds, and that goes through a public process. So it's not just LTD that has involvement in the implementation of STIF-funded projects, but certainly I think we've seen the community express value in MOD and the other services that are being provided in that area, and our current plans are to continue that service.
So the contract remains as long as the city of Cottage Grove decides to keep the contract, or does LTD have an opportunity to decide not to serve the contract?
As with all of our contracted services, those come up for periodic review as both funds are available, and they periodically tend to need to be publicly bid. So Typically for contracted services directly through LTD, we've created opportunities for public nonprofits and private enterprise to be able to bid on the service, and we can award it to those who can best respond to a request for proposals. So that, along with funding as it's available, allows us to either extend existing agreements or initiate new ones as their service needs. So that's typically done in collaboration with impacted stakeholders. So for ones in the Cottage Grove area, we work very closely with City of Cottage Grove to ensure that we're able to meet the needs of the community. We work very closely with South St. Wheels to make sure that everyone is has the resources they need to be able to provide these transportation options. So I don't think there would be any surprises if there were any changes in the future, and we try and plan these typically years in advance just due to the nature of the grants and funding cycle. But typically we can only express a commitment for what we know that we currently have, which is on a two-year cycle.
So do you feel like the system that we have in Cottage Grove or Southland is overly complicated, or does it just similar to the other contracts you have with the, you know, the providers of taxi services and van services and all the other resources we have to apply to the, you know, the ADA requirement? But yeah, that's the question. Do you think it's could be simplified, or is it just?
It's a really good question. And I'm open if there's others within LTD that want to speak to this, but I will say that I think there are many different types of service that are offered within Cottage Grove that can be a bit complex, but it's also not necessarily a bad thing. And that to me, I think what that speaks to is that City of Cottage Grove is well served in having a lot of different options to choose from. Yeah. And for example, there are places that say a smaller mod vehicle can go that a 40-foot bus just can't. And so sometimes there are just different trip purposes that could be best served by having different options available. And if we were to have kind of a more simpler one size fits all, it would also be more limiting in what we could do or where we could go. So I think the intention of having some of these different types of options is to be able to really maximize what's available for the community. And some people may choose one option kind of primarily, in the same way in the metropolitan area, we might see that there's folks who exclusively use Fixer Up Bus or exclusively use RideSource. But I know that there are some who are going to make use of mixed modes of transportation, which is really kind of gets at the heart of what we're trying to accomplish, where someone can more seamlessly transition. They might take MOD from their home to the bus stop and then take Fixer Up Bus into the Eugene area. So it creates more connections and options. Though you're right, it does mean that there's more choices, which can make it more complex or confusing. And we see that as our job and our challenge to be able to assist the public and give people the tools they need to be able to get where they're going. So with MOD specifically, there's a really great example of we currently allow someone to, though the intention is that it's a smartphone app to be able to book a trip, we still allow someone to call a human being who will pick up the phone and guide someone through the process and be able to book their trip for them. So particularly acknowledging there's those in the community that really requested that as an option, and either may not have a smartphone or be proficient with how to navigate that system. We still do our best to be able to be there to support folks in making this work. So we just see that as our job to do.
Well, thank you for that, John. I appreciate all your comments.
Of course, these are great questions.
Any other questions for John at this point? Okay, so I guess you can proceed with your presentation.
Okay, I am done with my presentation at this point. This is informational only, but I will be expecting to come back before the board with additional information. We do have the upcoming ride source and comprehensive operation analyses, which are going to get in much more detail. So this is just introductory, preparing you for what to expect to come. So really appreciate everyone's attention and thoughtful questions as we go through this.
Okay, then. I guess next up we have Cosette. There she is. And I'll turn it over to you when you appear there, Cosette.
because that Zoom is having a bit of a stall. So I have you over so you're able to speak and I can pull up your presentation. Oh, it worked. Great. You're good to go. If there are any more technical difficulties, I have your presentation up and ready to go in the background.
Thank you so much, Camille. So I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. So can you see my screen okay? Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah.
So good evening, everyone. I'm Cosette Reese. I'm the Director of Customer and Specialized Services. I'm here today to provide information about the consolidation of two of the many funding programs LTD depends on to do much of the good work of the district. And some of you have participated on the allocation of these funds in the past. For others of you, this will be new information. I'm going to try to be somewhat basic, but it's very technical. So please bear with me and understand that this is just foundational for some future decisions and actions. So before we dive into the details, it's important to circle back to our mission, vision, values. There are many choices and competing priorities. And while we'd like to do them all, we know that we have limited resources. Funding, such as the programs we're discussing today, contribute to our ability to live out these tenets and are reflected in the programs and services they support. This evening, I'll be reviewing the two funding programs that will be moving forward as one. So this will include providing a high-level summary of the funding sources and a sample of the programs and services they've historically been allocated to support. Second, I'll provide a summary of the changes of the rules developed to continue to meet the spirit and intent of both programs, but consolidated into a single process to allocate and manage the funding. And third, I'll provide some next steps as we approach the development of our 2024-2025 Lane County STIF formula plan and be ready to submit our funding plan in January of 2023. I also want to let you know that today we're only going to be discussing the formula funds received under these two programs. They also have a discretionary fund distribute through a competitive process, but we're only going to be talking today about the formula funds because that's a different process. And primarily those are the funds that will be affected by the rule changes. So the table that I have on here is an overview of the two types of fundings we're discussing today. We'll circle back to this later on in the presentation. The information in this table generally summarizes the similarities and also the differences of the two funds that will continue to serve their areas of primary focus. However, rather than two separate processes and applications, the states decided that moving forward, the funds will be allocated in a single plan and in a single application. So first, let's start with our Special Transportation Fund, or STF for short. This is state funding managed by the Oregon Department of Transportation, or ODOT. It was created in 1985, so it's a fairly old funding source, by the Oregon legislature, funded primarily through a cigarette tax, state photo ID cards, and we call it the gas tax, but it's the lawnmower tax. It's really a tax if you take a gas can to the pumps and you fill it up, we get a little bit of that. So that funding goes into the Special Transportation Fund. Funding's allocated on a biennial basis, which means that it's allocated 2 years at a time. The amount that we receive is based on the population of our region. The funding's intended to increase the resources available to provide public transportation for older adults and people with disabilities. The programs are guided to a large degree by our Lane County Human Service Coordination Plan, outlining priorities for use of the funding. This is one of the most flexible funding programs. It can be used to fund transportation services, including operations, capital equipment, planning, travel training, and other transit-related purposes. Unlike some of our other funding programs, this funding does not require a local match. is allocated in our metro area as well as in our rural areas. It funds community programs and it can be used to match dollars to leverage other funding. LTD is a designated STF agency, which means we're responsible for the coordinated plan, for developing the bylaws and oversight of the STF process to identify programs and make application to ODOT. And we're responsible for the general oversight, including contracts with providers, partners, and reporting back to ODOT on the use of the funding. So this is a list of some of the programs and services funded using STF funding. Some of these services are inside the metro area only, while others are outside or extend regionally, including some service to our rural areas. Some programs are primarily funded using STF or STF funds, while others, such as the Rhodey Express and Oak Ridge Diamond Express, use the STF funds only as required match, and that helps them access other funds, so it's requiring only a portion of their total funding. Other examples of critical programs and services provided include transportation for children attending Pearl Buck Preschool, mobility management activities to perform eligibility assessments for individuals accessing services through our RightSource call center, our Crucial Connections program, providing a small number of trips for immediate and medical needs not covered by other programs, veterans funding to help veterans access their benefits, and our origin to destination complementary ADA paratransit services in the metro area and in Florence, which is part of what John was just talking about. So in summary, STF is a relatively small amount of old funding that's remained relatively flat over the years, while the cost to provide the services and programs have increased. This has required some tough choices when we're allocating funds and the need to utilize more of our general funding to maintain these programs. So in contrast, we'll next take a look at the newer and much larger funding program, the Statewide Transportation Improvement Fund, or STIF, where the Special Transportation Fund is distributed based on population. The STIF funds are collected through an employee payroll tax and distributed back to the area that they were generated. The STIF program is intended to expand public transportation to access jobs, improve mobility, relieve congestion, and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. This funding also comes with some minimum requirements to serve low-income individuals and students grades 9 through 12. The formula STIF funds are also very flexible with no match required. In the same way we are for the STF funding, LTD is the qualified entity or QE for STIF formula funds distributed to Lane County. So we're responsible for adherence of the requirements, the development of the formula plan, and the process to allocate the plan, and the contract oversight and reporting of the funding. So unlike the STF funding, STIF funding is distributed, they're both distributed on a biennial cycle. STIF funding has supported transformational new services, such as the Link Lane service that operates between Eugene and Florence and onto Yahats. These are some of the programs and services funded through STIF funds. These include programs and services operating within the LTD service area, rural county, and they also are used to connect to services outside of Lane County. We're currently almost midway through our second biennium of STIF-funded programs. We haven't used some of the funding due to COVID. Many of the services that were paused during COVID are in the process of being implemented. Other projects will likely be revisited as part of our next biennium funding. LTD is creating a broad-based staff-level committee, including agencies within Lane County, to provide support in how this funding can be used in strategic ways, such as partnerships with other regions to provide seamless transportation. As John mentioned in our previous presentation, we'll be kicking off our comprehensive operations analysis for our fixed route early in 2023. This funding can be tapped to build back our service and invest in transformational levels of service for the future in our region. So I'm going to circle back now to the table, and you can see that there's many similarities. Some key points include that STIF funding is new and generous and likely to grow in the future. However, STF is fairly old. It's based on sources that by nature will not grow. In its primary focus, STIF allows for broad-based investment in equitable mobility and secondarily reducing congestion and greenhouse gas emissions. STF is focused primarily on efforts to serve older adults and people with disabilities. Other important aspects such as flexibility, cycle of funding, and required match are the same. So as you can see, there's many similarities between these two funding programs, so it makes sense to consolidate the processes to improve efficiency in the administration with the intention of also providing better funding reliability for our STF programs. LTD staff have participated at a state level on committees to plan for and to develop the rules of the consolidation. And these rules were recently approved by the Oregon Transportation Commission, and ODOT is putting together the solicitation for the funding right now. The STIF consolidation means that beginning with the 2024-2025 biennium, there will be a STIF program that will encompass both the payroll tax-based program and the population-based program serving older adults and people with disabilities. It was clear in the Rules Advisory Committee meetings that participants and the public felt very passionate about how the two funding programs were merged, and that they would continue to support the spirit and intent of both funding programs, using the funding in the most fair way to do the most good. Recognizing that the needs and priorities of each community is different, many parts of the processes were left intentionally vague to allow local communities to determine the best fit for their locale within certain parameters. The biggest and most notable changes to us are listed here. Of note, the advisory committee representation was changed to reflect ODOT's commitment to strengthen practices around diversity, equity and inclusion, expanding populations for consideration. So this is the full timeline of the STIF consolidation process. You can see it's been going on for a bit. We're currently in spring of 2022. ODOT is going to be releasing a plan. They're going to be releasing their full solicitation and application soon. And as LTD is the qualified entity, our process must be complete and our plan approved by you to be submitted in January of 2023. And the funds will be made available in July of 2023. So as a qualified entity, staff will be bringing a process and timeline to bring to the board at a near future meeting. As we talk with other qualified entities and with ODOT, the plan is to keep it simple to navigate the new requirements. One example of this would be to continue with a work group focused on recommendations specifically serving older adults and people with disabilities and roll that up into the STIF plan to be approved by the board as the QE. In addition, we want to ensure we continue to serve the spirit and integrity of both programs and meet the relatively short timeline. So we as staff are reviewing our advisory committee membership to make sure that it meets the rules and requirements. And we'll work with you to ensure that we have representation and a process that meets these new requirements. So I'm just gonna say, I know that it's really confusing because I'm talking about STF and STIF, and those sound a whole lot alike. I think that's another good reason to merge them together, but I just wanted to give you some foundation because we're going to be coming back to you soon, I believe, with some new potential appointments to the advisory committees, as well as a timeline to help the advisory committees work through soliciting projects, vetting projects, making some decisions and priorities, and bringing that plan back to you all. So that's going to be happening over about the next 8 months. So I just wanted to open it up for questions.
So Pete, I see you have a question.
As a matter of fact, I do. Thanks, Don, and thanks, Cosette, for that presentation. I'm not sure if I'm just confused here, but if I remember correctly from almost 2 years ago on the strategic planning committee, the funds we're talking about and for STIF that we're talking about right now are the formulary ones. We don't have to compete for those dollars, right? Is that correct?
That's correct. So these are formula funds. So they're distributed to our area based on population for STF and based on that employee payroll tax for STIF. So those come to our region, our county, based on how much was collected. And again, the STIF funds are much, much larger and the STF funds are smaller, but both of those are distributed to our area as a formula fund.
So we'll know kind of the ballpark of that at some point before we make our selection. So we'll have that list of things we'll do. Right? Is that
That's correct. For the current biennium, we have about $19 million in STIF funds. And then we have about $1.8 million in STF funds. So I expect that $1.8 million will remain flat. But I believe that the $19 million will grow in part because the money that we're not spending from this biennium rolls over. So we don't lose it. It's not a use it or lose it. It rolls over into our next biennium.
Okay. Thank you, Cosette. That's very helpful.
Thank you. Great question.
Cosette, at the end of this process in January, the STF fund will cease to exist. It will become part of the STIF fund and we won't be talking about STF anymore.
Correct. So I would say this is probably the last time I'm going to bring STIF/STF to you. It's just going to be STIF and STF will just be a subcomponent of that. So I won't be bringing that to you in that format again.
But that program would still exist. The funding sources would still go into a program called STF and then be distributed.
So the funding will go into STIF, but okay. It will go in as a fixed amount. And then we will be required to allocate at least that much money specifically to serve programs that provide increased mobility to older adults and people with disabilities.
Okay, thank you.
So there's some sideboards still on the funding, but it all gets rolled into the STIF process. Great questions.
Yeah. Well, if there are no other questions from the board, I guess we can release you, Cosette.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to have a conversation tonight.
Okay, so if we have no other business to discuss today, we could adjourn and go out and enjoy this beautiful day before the next rain, which I appreciate every drop of. So at that, I'll adjourn this meeting at 6:08 p.m. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.